Welcome to Podnuts, Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 253, Random Thoughts. I'm your host, Jeff Hallish. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. Call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. The Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by Ninja, the simple-to-use remote monitoring and management solution. Try it free at info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. Let me introduce the co-host. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How are you doing, John?
Good to be back, Jeff. A little two-week hiatus.
I hope you are well-rested because this is going to be at least a three-hour show.
Boom. Boom. Let's do it. You said something about deep thoughts. I keep thinking about deep thoughts with Jack Handy. Remember that on Saturday Night Live?
SNL, baby. Yeah, there you go. All right. So, John, why don't we go ahead, since you're the only one here with me, why don't we start off with a tip or story that everyone can learn from?
Well, a little quick tip. I've been messing around on Spiceworks, the community, more and more than I, you know, maybe more over the past month than I have over in the past year. And I stumbled upon their free tools for IT pros. And they really have a nice slew of tools. I put the link in the chat and I'll put it in the show notes. But, you know, you can find most of these tools by a combination of other things, like maybe MX Toolbox or other tools like that. But all in one place, they have everything from IP lookup to an SSL checker to traceroute to an IP scan. So it's pretty nice. And everything's on one page, neatly organized. So that's my little quick tip of the week, Spiceworks IT management software. And the great thing about it, it's all free.
Can't beat that. Hey, gotta like free, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Very cool. Well, I was gonna say, I don't really have a tip for this week. I was trying to rack my brain and think of all the things that I was doing over the last week. And I'm not really sure if I have anything. I will tell you this, and this is the way things always come to my mind. So I had somebody in the family who contacted me via text message and said, hey, they're looking for a wireless router. And so a lot of times when somebody says they're looking for a wireless router, the first thing you have to think about is what service are they on? Because when somebody says wireless router, I look at a lot of consumers, and if they have Comcast or Time Warner or any of these other companies, if they're already using the router that comes with that, then a lot of times I just point them in that direction and go, just use what the company's going to get you or give you, because if you do that, then you don't have to worry about some of these other issues, like bridge mode. If you have to take their router and put it in bridge mode, a lot of times that can be a pain, and especially when the consumer might not know what's going on, even if they were to call the company. And how many times have we talked to a representative from said companies that say, oh, no, we can't do that, even though we know they can? I've had to argue with a tech rep before about giving me the generic password to get into the router. I'm like, you need to give it to me or I'm going to leave your service. That's how simple that is. Because I need to do something with it inside my own network. I don't want to use the stuff that you're giving me. And I can't use my stuff unless I'm able to make these changes. So they finally relented and gave me that password. That's my tip.
I mean, what are you using? I mean, besides that, I don't do a lot of home networks anymore for customers. But when I do get asked, a lot of the times I start with, you know, the skill of the user I'm talking to. You know, sometimes it's just easier to leave them on the Comcast or whatever equipment they have. I see you shaking your head. So, yes. The other thing, though, if I was going to say, let's get off of that, I might tell them, hey, let's just get a modem from your provider only, or maybe get our own modem for a home user so they can get rid of that rental fee. And then are you guys rolling out anything like the Google Wi-Fi or Eero, any of that mesh networking?
No, not that I've heard of around here.
Well, the only reason I've been doing that, or I did that for a couple of customers at home, is just because they needed coverage, you know, more coverage, and you can expand those out with their mobile, with their units. So. Interesting.
Well, I think if I was going to go down that route, though, I'm going to go the route of probably putting in a business class router with a wireless access point And I use Arachnus here. Arachnus covers a 2,500 square foot home, including the front yard and backyard, all the way to the street and all the way to the back of the yard. So that's one wireless access point. And if you're talking about anything new, a newer build, unless you're getting bigger than that, I don't really see the need to mesh stuff together, because you, one will cover a lot of that. If you have good equipment. Now, if you're buying cheap equipment, yes, you might have to add a wireless access point in order to get them full coverage in a home that's of a larger size.
Now you're talking like me, like in a business. That's the same thing we would do in a business, you know, do managed access points and all that sort of stuff. But I don't disagree with you at all.
And I like your idea too. It's the same thing I did. I went and bought my own modem, got rid of the access fee with Comcast, and said, okay, I'm going to do my own stuff. And part of that was, even if you can get them to shut the guest Wi-Fi off, if you're ever doing a scan, a lot of times you'll find out whenever there's an update, somehow that thing gets turned back on. So I said, I am not going to be a part of that. I don't have to be. And because I'm a tech, I can have this stuff in my own business or in my own office, in my own home, and I know what I need to do with it. No different than any other business, really. And I think the quality of the business line is a ton better. I was like everybody else. I was letting people know, hey, let's get a TP-Link. Well, I'm finding out that TP-Links are falling apart left and right. So that's not a real good solution.
And so if I had to put a branded home router in, I'd probably put something in from ASUS. At least that's what I've been told. Again, I don't do a whole lot of with it, but the guys that do tell me that's good stuff.
Yeah. I think ASUS is probably the number one consumer end router that I hear good, consistent coverage, reliability, all these different things that are important to a home network.
So basically we're saying that if it's a home customer that we might have an ongoing relationship with, we might put in something a little bit more robust, like the Arachnus product you mentioned about, but maybe if it was just a one-off, you know, I kind of like those mesh products because they usually have a nice mobile app or something where they can turn the Wi-Fi on and off and see the status visually.
Well, and that's they could do that with, and here's the thing. So if you're talking about, now if you're talking about a cheap $50 to $100 consumer grade router.
Let's not talk about that.
Well, here's the thing. When it comes to Wi-Fi coverage, if you're talking about, you know, maybe a 1,000 square foot home, that would probably be fine. Anything bigger than that, and depending on the age of the home and the electrical that's in that home, you might not have the coverage that you want from something like that. And you're going to, if you buy a higher end consumer grade router, you're looking at a couple hundred dollars. So even with the Arachnus stuff, if you were to sell it even at your cost, you're looking at what, $320 for two of the, you know, the router and the wireless access point.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the best way to go, because here you have, and this is where I do actually like two separate units. I've got my wireless access point and I've got my router. If one or the other fails, like if my wireless access point fails, I'm not having to change all the equipment out. I get a new one. I put it in. I set it up. Not a big deal. Same thing with the router. You know, so you've got the separation, which I kind of like in this particular case, because with the Wi-Fi signals and having everything in one box, you've got a lot of heat that is being created by the components in there. Now that I've separated it out, you're going to have less heat with the antennas and all that kind of stuff that's actually working.
And you're actually indirectly talking about something that Rick just brought up in the chat regarding probably choosing a manufacturer that keeps up with their firmware updates.
Well, that's no consumer grade routers then. That's zero.
Almost none of them. You're right.
Zero.
Yeah. But with a lot of the, you know, to roll back to the mesh products, you know, the Eero product, the Google Wi-Fi product, they do get regular updates. So that is nice. Okay.
And I think too, well, you know, in Arachnus and all that kind of stuff. And I think your business grade stuff is
those
going
are business
to
class products.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. They're going to be on top of that stuff. They're going to make sure that they patch holes. Again, I don't know what the length of time that a manufacturer feels that you should own a router before you replace it. I would imagine it's like anything else, maybe a couple years.
Well, I think that's a major difference between the residential products and the business products we're talking about. Usually, a business manufacturer will say this product is now end of life and actually post that versus a residential product. I'm guessing manufacturers just sell them till they no longer have any. Or, I mean, you're right. I mean, how often do you see a firmware update? Pretty rarely.
Right. Yeah. I've usually, if you keep a router for 5 years, you might see one, and that's might.
Yeah, I can't claim any knowledge about the residential stuff, but I know, like OpenMesh, we're getting firmware updates all the time. We got our crack fix already.
All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll go ahead and get into our main topic, which is nothing but our random thoughts. All right, our show today is brought to you by Ninja, the remote monitoring and management solution to help you become more efficient, more productive, and more profitable. With Ninja, you can have faster fixed response time and offer preventative maintenance to your customers. Ninja understands what you need to run your business, which is why their RMM solution is integrated with tools that you use every day. Ninja provides competitive pricing, patch management, antivirus, email and SMS alerting. You can be up and running quickly with minimum training time. Something I really like. You have TeamViewer integration for that remote support. It's one solution for managed and non-managed clients alike. Network visibility inside the RMM. See what's going on inside that network. Easy to read dashboards. Again, got to be something easy to read so that I will actually parse the information versus just glossing over it. A powerful device search where you can create custom queries and export the list to show your customers. They also have an executive style report showing important system metrics such as health score, software added and removed, hardware changes, and TeamViewer connections. Ninja is offering Podnuts a free 30-day trial, and when you decide to buy, a 10% discount. Take advantage of this offer, go to info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. All right, so our main topic for today is John's in my random thoughts. So, John, what do you want to talk about today? What's going to be the first subject?
I want to start out with a subject that is near and dear to my heart and tell you, Jeff, that you were right.
And I know.
There are no second chances. So I had my first SSD failure I've ever had of an SSD drive that I installed.
Okay.
So I've had, you know, SSDs fail, but this is the first SSD that I can track back to an invoiced product that I sold. So I had a SanDisk SSD fail. And just like you've always been preaching, there's no second chance. It's either on or off. There's no data recovery. There's no please spin right, save me. You know, none of that. So luckily, good backups, not a big deal. SanDisk's RMA procedure was okay, lengthy. I didn't have to call anybody. I could do it all online. It's a little weird. A lot of email back and forth. Took about a week. But the one thing I wanted to bring up with an SSD in regards to that. So in this case, that drive was encrypted. The data on that drive was encrypted.
Ooh.
So that's okay. And actually, in this way, it's a good thing. So I felt okay in sending that drive back for replacement. Because I knew that no matter what on the other end, that encrypted data is quote-unquote, encrypted, so I didn't have to worry about that. But keep in mind that if you have an SSD or even a drive that fails and you can't do something to get rid of that data, you probably can't RMA that drive in some circumstances dealing with compliance, meaning you can send, like in this case, luckily this wasn't a compliant customer, but if it was, let's say it was a medical customer and that was just raw data on that drive, even though that drive had quote-unquote failed, you can't know with 100% certainty that no data could be recovered by that drive from the manufacturer. You know, maybe they could replace an SoC or some sort of chip on that drive and then put it back in production and somehow it comes back magically to life and they can see all that data. Maybe. I know. 1% chance maybe, but, you know, that's kind of a no-no with compliance. So we're starting to encrypt everything 100% in all of our compliance customers. So that's becoming a non-issue. But when I was on the SanDisk website, which I don't go to very much, I stumbled upon a neat little product called iExpand. Have you ever heard of this?
No, I haven't. Tell me more.
Tell me more. At least I thought it was kind of cool, and it's for iPhone only. So those of you rocking an Android, move away. I rock an Android. And I'll put the links in the show notes. But it's a product, so you go to bed at night, everybody probably plugs their phone in for a little bit of charging. What the iXpand does is also back up the phone at the exact same time. So it takes a snapshot of all the data on the phone, puts it on a little storage device, i.e. SanDisk self-storage, and charges your phone at the same time. So if your phone storage dies, you get a new phone, you just plug it back into the iXpand and it restores all your data.
Oh, nice.
Maybe neat, maybe not, but I thought that might be a neat add-on for maybe home users or something like that. So I just thought clever. I'd never seen anything like that before.
Now, with the SSDs, I know a lot of people are going, I haven't seen a failure yet. Yeah, because they're not as mainstream as everybody would love to think that they are. The problem is, it's like anything else. There's way more spinning drives out there than there are SSDs. Now, once that changes over, a lot of those drives, you're going to, electronics, here's the thing, okay, pay attention, electronics fail all the time. It just happens. It's just part of life. Just understand it and go, there's nothing magical about an SSD. Yes, there are no moving parts. But golly, even the moving parts on the hard drives, it's amazing. I've got some drives that are probably 15 plus years old that still spin and still work, no problem. So, I mean, it happens. But then I've got other drives that I've had for 8 months and fail on me for whatever reason. It could be the board. It could be the actual spinning part. You know, it's hard to tell with this stuff. But one thing I know, that everything is subject to failure. So as long as you remember that, and like John said, have good backups in place, it's not an issue. And that's where I believe it's our duty, especially when it comes to residential. Business, a lot of times, we're selling the backups. They're eating it up because they know their data is important. And we're the experts. Residential, a lot of them are one-offs you might see once a year. And to get them to back up, they don't understand why they should back up. And a lot of times, most of the time, I can get something back from a spinning drive when it starts to fail. You know, you pull it out, you put it in a bench system, you pull the information off. Not a big deal most of the time. Now, if it's not spinning or not doing what it needs to do, then there's the other options, sending it out to somebody to take apart and replace parts or do whatever they need to do in order to get that information back. With an SSD, it can probably be done, but I'm just sure it's probably pretty expensive. So I think as long as we're pushing the SSDs to our customer, which gives them a faster computer experience, I think it's almost criminal not to grab them and force them to have some sort of backup if they're going to be using an SSD, because if that fails, it's either going to cost them so much money to get the information back that they're not willing to pay it, or they've lost things, just precious things, forever. So I think there's a lot to be said for that. And that's my only gripe about people saying that I haven't had any failures on SSDs yet being the key word.
Well, it's all man-made, and your point is well taken. It's all going to break. I'll add on to that is just like any other gear, especially maybe when you're dealing with business, or maybe even more importantly with home users, or just as importantly, you know, you want to look at the manufacturers you're using. Like my SanDisk RMA experience was not bad. I wouldn't call it awesome either. But, you know, if you're going to sell, I don't know, what are some maybe lesser, ADATA, Mushkin, and I don't know anything about these companies, so maybe they're good, but... you know, you want to look at the RMA process. So when you do have a failure, you know, that you can either quickly get a replacement or decide how you're going to handle that moving forward. So you don't have to decide in the heat of the moment when that drive has failed and your customer's saying, well, when can I have my computer back? You know, what's your policy going to be? Are you just going to slam a new drive in there and then wait for the RMA and use that drive for something else? Or how's that going to work?
Well, I think here's part of the problem, too, is when it comes to spinning drives, and this is a U.S.-Canada thing, but the manufacturers are not required to give you a new drive.
to SanDisk's credit, they sent me a brand new sealed SSD. So, and maybe that's the case for SSD because they haven't figured out how to reman them yet.
That could be. So for a lot of people that don't know, and I think we've explained this before, but if you take a hard drive that's, let's say it's a terabyte, and it fails, you send it back to Western Digital, Seagate, whomever. That drive will be basically be taken apart, heads will be disabled, disks will be disabled, and maybe they'll turn that into a 500 gig hard drive. Well, in doing that, they have to rewrite the firmware to that particular hard drive. And so it's not consistent with anything that's out there. They hand write that stuff to make sure that it runs as a 500 gig drive. And that is the refurbished product that you get back. Now with SSDs, maybe like John said, it's harder to do that. And they actually, or maybe the manufacturing process, it's just easier to send you a new one. All right. So let's see.
Hey, you want to talk more about hard drives?
Yeah, let's talk about hard drives. I like talking about hard drives.
Well, it seems like every quarter or annually they have the big report, but every quarter, you know, we always talk about the Backblaze results. You know, they come out with the quarterly failure rates for all the hard drives they use in their data centers.
Okay.
So, you know, you take it with a grain of salt. I'm a WD guy myself. I have very good luck with Western Digital. You know, there was only one surprising number on here, and I put the link in the show notes, and it'll be in the chat as well. But boy, there was one Seagate drive that had a failure rate of 31%, which I thought was really high.
Well, I don't use Seagate anymore because I've had way too many failures from them over the years. And they used to be my go-to. Even I love Seagate. They were just as fast or sometimes even faster than the Western Digitals. And again, it's like anything else. All this stuff goes through these good seasons, bad seasons, kind of just maintaining seasons. It's really hard to follow along. So you try to use what's mainstream out there, what they're building a lot of, maybe what they're putting out and what a lot of people are buying. And I think it just goes in cycles like anything else. Hey, one day we might turn around and go, man, Western Digital is a dog. I need to get Seagates now.
Right. I'm with you 100%. It's kind of interesting to look at the numbers. Like they've got one Seagate model out there where they have 33,000 of them and they only had a 3% failure rate. But then they've got another Seagate model where they have 145 of them. So 33,000 compared to 145. But with that 145, 31% of them failed. So, you know, it could be a firmware batch, could be a manufacturing error, all that. Yeah, I hate to dog on Seagate because, yes, they used. I would call them maybe my first love.
Yep, I'm with you. Well, and a lot of times from the manufacturing process, a lot of people don't get this, but when it comes to hobbies or electronics, computers, other things, things that are not like super important, like maybe, I don't know, a car. And maybe their PCM modules they use for their electronic brain. Now, when it comes to a car manufacturer, there are checks and balances for their process. When it comes to hobby type manufacturing or electronic type manufacturing, usually there are no checks and balances. And so you will basically have, they'll just run the lines and that stuff goes out to the consumer. Hey, whatever fails, you send it back in. So there is always going to be a higher percentage in that stuff than there is that is something that is maintained by some sort of government standard. Something to think about.
I think that was a deep thought with Jeff Halish.
Deep thoughts. Manufacturing. Okay, so now, if we talked about hard drives, there's, I don't know, where do you want to go from here, John? Did you have something else in mind?
Well, I got a couple other things. I don't know. I don't resell VoIP, but I had a rough week last week. Would that have been 2 weeks ago? My underlying VoIP carrier that my partner resells into a ton of my clients had a huge outage for about the entire week, and that's Cordial.
Ooh, a week.
I mean, we're talking 100,000 phones not answering calls, disaster recovery not working, displays on phones not working, customers not being able to take or make calls. So you know, that creates an interesting week for me, even though I'm not the phone provider. You can bet I'm getting some calls during the week about, hey, our phones don't work, blah, blah, blah. So just a quick couple lessons learned and a quick couple shout outs to a few of the vendors I used to kind of save my bacon along the way. First of all, a little shout out to my VoIP provider, who's my local provider, is Blackport Solutions, and they were fantastic. They were all over it. I mean, there was two nights that I was on site at clients at midnight, and all of their guys were there. So, you know, trying to do some workarounds and all that. So it's great to have a vendor that goes to work for me or works as hard as I do for my customers. But everybody knows that I use Calyptix for my UTMs. So we were having some problems. We found out they were network related. So, and we were having some trouble really identifying where those were coming from regarding to this VoIP outage. So we called Calyptix at 12:30 at night. Support answered after three rings. I won't use his name, but the guy on the other line was super fantastic, helped us use some of the tools built into the Calyptix device, found the problem, which was on the provider's end, but we found a workaround provided by Calyptix to help us solve that. So what we had been chasing for about 120 minutes, maybe 180 minutes, Calyptix found for us in like 20 minutes, made some suggestions, we made some changes, and we were able to produce a solution. So that was fantastic. And, you know, it doesn't cost anything extra than what you pay for your subscription to have that kind of support at your beck and call. So that was pretty awesome. So high five to Calyptix on that. And then also as part of this outage, a lot of times we were having to do a lot of rebooting of phones, so of VoIP phones. And I don't know how familiar everybody is, but, you know, a lot of times when you have to reboot a phone in order for it to pull a new configuration from its server. So WeMe would make some changes on the server side up in the cloud. You reboot the phone, it goes out and looks and say, oh, my configuration has changed. So then it pulls that down. So I'm at my daughter's volleyball game. My VoIP provider calls me and says, hey, any way we can get to these phones so we can reboot them? So at this particular provider, I have all Arachnus gears. So that means I have Arachnus PoE switches, Arachnus Overseer, and I've linked to all this in the show notes. But with the Arachnus Overseer, I was able to use my cell phone sitting in the stands, log in, see my PoE switch, turn the power over Ethernet off on the five ports I needed to turn those phones off, turn the power back on to reboot those phones, and then go back to watching some volleyball. So, you know, sometimes we say that mobile apps aren't important or whatever, or aren't the key. I mean, in that case, that saved me, you know, leaving volleyball possibly, or having to go, you know, in the middle of the night back to a client on the other side of town to do all this. So, again, I would say thank you, Arachnus and Overseer, for that. That was pretty sweet.
Now, let me preface this by saying, because I know you're pointing that comment to me about the mobile apps. But
really?
Yeah, I know. But anyways, no, my whole point with the mobile app is, yes, they are nice to have. My problem is a lot of people don't absolutely know how to unplug. Now, you used it for an emergency situation, which I think is perfectly fine. If you're using that to run your day-to-day business and you've got to be on 24/7, I mean, I know people that sleep with their phone. It's that bad. So when I say the mobile apps, no, do you need mobile apps? Not all the time, but in particular cases, yes, I love the Overseer app. And yes, it is on my phone and I do things on the network with my phone and it makes it more convenient wherever I'm at. So I do get it. I don't want to be tied to something 24/7. That's my only problem with them.
I don't disagree with anything you're saying there. I would just suggest if you're going to be tied to it, that it's a conscious decision and that you've made that decision and that you're getting paid to do that.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And that's a lot of times what's not happening. I think for a lot of people, they're on all the time, but they're not always getting paid. And every time you're on, the longer it gets, the less and less per hour that you're actually making. Just saying.
And the more and more unintentionally your customers will take advantage of that and not expect to pay for it in the future either. So you have to be careful of that.
So our good friend Matt Rainey always says, if it's more than a yes or no, it's a charge.
I miss Matt. Shout out, Matt. Shout out.
Holy cow. And who is this gracing our presence?
Mr. LeBron.
What's up, Paco? We have Paco LeBron from Prodigy Techs. How you doing, Paco?
I think he's working on his audio.
He looks like he's clicking on something. I hear the clicking, but
it's been a while. Hello, partners. Did you miss me?
So, Paco, I was going to bring this up anyways. And John, are we done with the VoIP stuff? Because that was good stuff.
Yeah, that's all I got on Cordell.
Okay,
I think we're up and good now. So, amen.
Which sucks, by the way, because I was watching.
Oh, so Paco, let us know what is going on in your world that has changed over the last, I don't know, week or so.
Has changed in the last week or so. Well, I think the biggest piece is trying to, so there's a lot more in mainstream news. There's a lot more mergers. There's a lot more new products that are coming out. So I'm now reevaluating some of the things that I'm using. So that kind of has changed because I'm now trialing out a bunch of stuff to hopefully in the new year be a little bit more efficient at what I do and also cut costs. So,
okay.
Not necessarily jumping around, but I'm trying it out essentially.
Gotcha. And what's changed in the podcasting realm for you?
In the podcasting realm? Well, I guess you'd have to find out on episode 492 that just released this past Tuesday and episode 493.
Which will be out this Tuesday.
That will be out this Tuesday. And for those that are not knowing what I'm talking about, you better resubscribe to Podnuts Daily to get the full scoop.
That's right. And let's put it this way. We'll put it simply. I'm down to one podcast now. I have raised all my children and moved them out to different podcasts. So I'm kind of on my own with one, which makes my life a whole lot better. But yeah, go check out Podnuts Daily 492 to get the new information there. And 493 will be out Tuesday.
Hey, thanks for the segue, Paco, but let's talk about something else. You said you were looking at options. Just so you know, I stumbled on a neat little spreadsheet over on Reddit that I'll link to that is just a cool spreadsheet about 10 or 15 different RMM platforms, and it compares all their features in a list base. So if anybody is looking or comparing, I know our friends over at Ninja rock the house, but I'll put this in the show notes as well. But there's everything in there from Autotask, Otera, Ninja's in there, ConnectWise, Kabuto, Continuum, so on and so forth.
How updated is it? Or what's the...
It's pretty updated. It's pretty updated. Okay. And it has a discussion tab and a scratch tab, scratch page, and it compares the features.
So going back to when we're talking about saving price on products that we use or saving money, a saving price. I don't even know what my brain. Anyways, so when you're talking about saving money, yes, on a product or service that you're using, a lot of people will base what they do on a regular basis based on price. And price is not something that you necessarily want to base things on all the time. There is a price factor that will come into play when you're trying to balance the books and you go, there's something over here that's equivalent that I can use. It's an easy transition, and it's going to save me X amount of thousands of dollars a month. The problem with a lot of people is, especially smaller one-person shops, is that a lot of them are price shopping for pennies. And you'll switch over to a company for literally pennies, and a lot of people say, well, no, it's more than pennies. No, by the time you get everything said and done, and you get it moved over to another product that you have to relearn. You're spending your talent and your time to relearn these things and to get them up and running. So there's a cost in doing this. We all get paid per hour, right? So if you're doing a per hour and you're looking at what you make, again, you're eating into it one way or another. And if you do this consistently, then you're always going to be hit behind the eight ball. You'll never catch up versus where you take what you have, learn it really good, and go out there and increase your customer base and sell it to your customers. That's really what needs to happen. A lot of people are looking for this, what I would call silver bullet. And it doesn't exist except in werewolf movies.
I have some of those in my fridge.
Silver bullet? Oh, yeah, that's not that type of silver bullet, John.
Okay. I think the biggest piece, like you just mentioned, is that a lot of us early on always look at price because we're trying to squeeze every penny that we can. But I think you and I suffered from this, and we've had many conversations over the past couple years early on when I started the business too. I think the biggest piece is that a lot of people will need to understand is the effort that goes into it, and I think that revolves around all kinds of things, the age of a company. You know, if they just started out, are they going to last long? You know, I was on the tail end of a company that was very new and closed abruptly, you know, and that takes a lot of effort and time, like you mentioned, billable hours, and just let alone effort altogether. The other piece of it is the value. Now, my switching from before was cost effective. My switching now in hopes is to be more efficient. And I think the biggest piece that you want to make sure, like I mentioned, a lot of new products that have come out are actually products that I already have used, but are kind of streamlining a lot of the stuff that they're doing, and it may make more sense to do it that way. So I think the biggest piece to take away from this is, yes, the bottom line is always important, but I think the biggest piece is the more you can be efficient on time can bring in more revenue/net into your business, and that's really what you want to start looking out for.
And Renactus makes a good product and product points. I don't even have a silver bullet. You know, he was at the Unconvention and he says, you know, it's the time to evaluate and then learn a new product. I mean, in the heat of battle every day, I mean, we're rolling. I mean, who has time to evaluate all this stuff?
Yeah, and it's our good friend Rick Smith that we had plenty of good times over there at Unconvention. Rick? Yeah, that's Rick. Oh, yeah. He just wrote in the thing there. but yeah, he will be on Podnuts Daily hopefully here soon. We're just scheduling some stuff to align to get him on the show.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah, I think a lot of times I would love to have more time to mess around with the products that are coming out, new products. And I do get some time to do those types of things, which is nice. But a lot of times when it comes back to, and I got to get something in, get it out, I will go back to the old standard of what I've been doing and just make that work for me because in, out. Now, when I've got time, I might take a new product, and maybe if I'm doing a virus removal or something, I might use a different product and see if that can be effective for me or if I'm still running several products on this particular virus removal to get this, you know, get the job done. So.
Well, you guys know I'm a big UVK fan. And one of the big reasons I like it is Fred over there. You give him a suggestion and I don't know, 95% of the time you run an update and your suggestion's in the product. So it's absolutely fantastic. And I've been using that for a long time, but I just put a suggestion in the other day or maybe even last week. And he said, John, that's been in there since like, you know, 1.0, here's how you find it. And I was like, I found this whole section in UVK that I didn't even know existed, which makes me even like it more. So
nice.
I mean, that brings up the point that, I mean, it's something I use consistently and all the time. And I just didn't click on one button to expose another menu. And now I'm in there all the time because it's like my favorite part. So.
Yeah. I think the biggest piece, like you just said, it's relationships. And being able to have that relationship with a vendor, the difference between a vendor and a partner. And I think you've talked about that many times before, where having good partners is really what's going to make the difference in running your business. Another piece I forgot the whole point of my spiel earlier was the fact on you want to make sure that you're frugal, but not cheap. So there are two big differences between those two. I know a lot of techs, a lot of good friends of mine as well, that are just cheap. Like they won't hear rhyme or reason. If it costs them literally 25 cents more, they will not do it if it saves them 3 hours in their day. They just won't. And it's because in their head, it's always a cost thing. And unfortunately, those are the ones that are just going to be on the tail end of their growth. They're going to grow. They're just not going to grow as fast as a lot of us who are seeking the resources and the information to help us get better.
You know, it's funny because sometimes when I'm in the shop at work, people will bring a government project in, something they need repaired, and they'll hand it to me, and I go, yeah, how much does this cost? And it, whatever, but anything under $50, I just tell them, go to the store and replace it. It's not worth my time and effort to sit there and fix that for what they can replace it for. Most of the time, most of these products are right around $20, which is absolutely 100%. Yeah, go spend the $20. You make good money and just replace it. But you're right. It is a mentality, and it's a mentality shift that you have to get out of. And I like how you put that, the difference between frugal and cheap. And there's a lot of people that are cheap out there, and it's good to be wise with your money and make sure you're just not throwing it around. And especially if it's not doing anything for you in your business, or it's giving you this perceived help in your business, but really not giving you anything in the end when you compile all the numbers together at the end of the year.
And it's really the main thing to consider there, in my opinion, is the hidden costs of whatever that cheap product you're selling is. So you put a cheap hard drive in a machine, how much sooner are you going to need to roll a truck to fix that hard drive? You know, what time are you going to lose replacing that with warranty work or just pure, how many 15-minute phone calls are you going to have to do to have somebody reboot that cheap router they put in?
Exactly. And that stuff happens all the time. That's why I'm always surprised, especially in businesses, why, if we're so-called professionals, why are we buying consumer-grade products and putting them in businesses? I will never understand that.
It's funny. I just logged into Ecliptics the other day, and I was on the homepage, and it tells you the last reboot date. The last reboot date was exactly a year ago on this Ecliptics, because even some of the firmware updates will apply without a reboot. So
nice.
Hey,
that's well worth it. And it much better than 6 months or a year down the road going back and fixing a failure in a product.
Amen.
Yeah. Especially in a business where a lot of times you will have a lot of heavier traffic than you will have in a home network, because a lot of businesses that use the internet need it for stuff pretty much all day long.
Realize all the traffic that's going out over their LAN connection or their WAN connection now. Backups, phones, you know, cameras. I'm trying to exclude all the computer stuff related, you know, anything. All that stuff goes over their LAN now. So, I mean, that router is extremely important now.
No, so going off of what John was saying is rolling your truck out for something that either you've done cheaply or put in something cheaply. The other thing that you want to make sure you remember is the whole part of winging it too, which goes into a whole nother direction on the conversation, is if you're doing something for the first time, and you know how the saying says is you agree and then you try and learn later. The big piece about that whole thing on trying to learn is make sure you document, because yeah, you're going to screw up on your first time doing something. But if you screw it up a second time, and you screw it up on the third time because you didn't document it the first time on all the pitfalls, you're setting yourself up for failure as well. So that's another reason on sending out your truck multiple times when it's a bunch of gotchas that you learned about the first time around. So that's something that I'm also writing down and remembering on a lot of these setups, that where just certain servers and certain configurations that are my first time doing it, I need to make sure I document them, because there's going to be somebody else that's going to ask for that same thing, and I'm going to probably run into something similar.
As far as documenting that stuff, a lot of people will go, well, I don't have time. I'm in there. I'm trying to fix the problem. Well, everybody's smartphone has a recorder on it, whether it's an iPhone or an Android phone, and you can get to that app or use Google Keep or Evernote or whatever you want to use, and you can click a little microphone button, and you can speak into your device and just go give a step-by-step of what you were doing. And that way you can take that information later when you've got some downtime and compile that information so that you have it for the next time that you go out and do that same situation.
And my argument to that too is exactly like you said, would you prefer 30 minutes of unbilled time or 4 hours of unbillable time because you screwed up on something that you didn't document for 30 minutes?
Right, exactly. Yeah, there is going to be things, there's going to be learning curves, and obviously we're not going to always, charge for the learning curve that we go through, but that's okay because in the end, you'll become stronger for it. And the next time you go and do it, you'll cut it down. You'll still charge a good rate for it and it'll still take it X amount of time, but you'll actually make more money in the long run because of the learning curves that you suffered in the beginning.
And keep in mind that you should be billing based on project a lot of times for those things, not on the time it takes you to complete it.
True.
Is that clear? I mean, normally if it took you 3 hours to do it the first time and that was your project billing, even when you get it mastered and it only takes you 60 minutes, I mean, still keep that 3 hour cost, you know, depending on what the product is, because that's how you've learned, you've mastered it. You're now a professional. Boom.
Exactly.
Charge your value.
And a lot of times too, I will add extra hours in when I'm billing out a project just because that initial quote, I let them know, hey, I'll probably add 2 or 3 hours depending on some of the things that are unknown. And I like what John has kind of taught me to do is that I go in and I will do an evaluation and try to take as much information on a network and what's going on in an office before I actually go in and do the work, which saves you a lot. But believe it or not, and John, you probably still get this, as much as you try to document everything, there's still things that you forget. You're like, oh, I wish I would have remembered that.
I just found a switch today that I'd forgotten all about, little 5-port that's in the reception area. So yeah.
Happens all the time. All right. Who's got another subject we can talk about?
Want to talk about Windows Defender?
Yeah, baby. Talk about Windows Defender.
Say that slower.
Yeah, baby.
So I didn't know this, but did you guys know that you can enable PUP detection in Windows Defender?
Ooh, no.
Potentially yes. Unwanted programs. I'll put some links in the show notes and the chat as I always do. But yes, Windows Defender can detect and remove malware and viruses, but it doesn't potentially detect potentially unwanted programs by default. You have to enable it. Mm-hmm. All right. And you have to do that with some registry settings. Now, if you're running the enterprise version of this, it is already there, but I don't know how many of us are doing that. But you can opt into it with some registry hacks, or my friend Fred over at UVK has a one button click in UVK to turn it on. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I'm definitely going to check that out. I was playing around with UVK earlier, so that's why I was...
So, you know, I rock WebRoot, which I really like, but I leave Windows Defender on the machines too, and you can bet I'm going to enable this as well.
You know, that's a good point because there are products out there that back in the day, pay attention, kids. Back in the day, you couldn't run two antiviruses at the same time. Well, nowadays, there's a lot of products out there that I will call, I don't know that they are necessarily an actual true antivirus because a lot of stuff has moved to the cloud, a lot of the scanning engines are not absolutely running on the machine at the same time. So you can have different antiviruses like a Windows Defender or a WebRoot running at the same time. Things like Malwarebytes will run alongside all of these. And so this is kind of proving my point a little bit though, that Windows Defender, because Windows Defender is the only thing I run on this particular machine. The one I'm on right now. Now, my bench machine, I've got all kinds of others. Yeah, I know. I've got Malwarebytes and different things running on there. On my kids' machines, Malwarebytes. I still use Windows Defender. Actually, it's got Windows Defenders, Viper. So I'm using a lot of different things to try to see what's kind of the best bang for the buck. And I'm with John. John and I have talked about this earlier that sometimes the more you have running, as long as it's not bogging down the system, which again, a lot of these are cloud-based solutions. They're not necessarily running in the background on the machine all the time. They are, but they aren't. So they're a little lighter on the resources, which makes it kind of nice. And with the new hardware that's coming out nowadays, really, a lot of these machines will run this stuff no problem as long as you don't have any different infections or different pieces of software that you've installed for free, because nothing's free, And all of a sudden these things are dialing back to the mothership all the time going, yeah, I'm here. You know, here's how I hook into the system and blah, 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 blah. So a lot of times when that happens, you will get several of these programs that are running and it slows your internet speeds down. There are times where somebody will say, my machine is slow. And a lot of times I'll grab that machine in the computer itself before hooking it up to the internet. There's nothing wrong with it. It just runs. As soon as you hook it up to the internet, anything that they were doing that communicates back and forth, all of a sudden, all these programs are trying to fight for the bandwidth. Well, depending on your bandwidth where you're at, maybe here in my office where I have a high amount of bandwidth, I don't really have that problem. But maybe at home where they're not paying for that premium service, maybe they do have a problem or they have several different devices that are trying to share all that information. Any thoughts on antivirus?
More warriors you can have in the fight, the better.
I think so. Well, we've talked about having a you know, different level of approach coming into your network. John's talked about the unified threat management. All that kind of stuff is important as far as you're making walls along the way to make your environment as safe as possible. So it's not just throwing an antivirus on a machine anymore that's going to do all the work. And everybody knows, I've said this before, all antiviruses, in my opinion, from Windows Defender to any of them, they're about the same. And the reason I say that is because there's not been one machine of any antivirus that's been on a machine that I've gotten in here that I didn't have to clean. Not one. They're all susceptible to a certain extent. Now, that could be because of Windows updates. That could be for a lot of different things. Java, Adobe Reader, whatever. So there's a lot of things out there. There's a lot of holes that even if you've got the best thing on the market, supposedly, maybe it doesn't catch that thing on that day. That's my opinion anyways.
I can't disagree with any of that, really. I do like some products over others. But yeah, as long as we're not affecting performance, why not?
Exactly. Paco, you're quiet about antivirus. What?
Nah, I'm not saying anything. It's funny because my Ninja just sent me that my CPU is over 80% utilization. And I have multiple AVs on my machine. So I'm curious as to what that is causing it.
That's because you're running Chrome.
I was going to say Chrome is probably the reason you're getting over 80%. That would be normal.
Probably. So, okay. So why don't we talk about making switches of comfortability. So we're all kind of all set in our ways with certain things that we like and certain products. But like, for example, I'm still tired of Google Chrome with the memory hog. But I remember the last time that I switched over to Firefox that it was such a pain to get a lot of my Google services to run that I ended up just dealing with the peaks every so often going back to Google Chrome. When you guys are trying something out, how much pain do you go through before you just decide, and you end up going back to whatever it is that you were using before?
Probably none, to be honest with you. if it's painful at all, because I think unless I've got extra time where I can try something out. And here's the thing that I hate. So when it comes to a Google Chrome problem, right? I'm going to take care of that problem because I like Google Chrome and I like the Google universe. They've got me lock, stock, and everything, you know, so I'm just going to build a machine that's going to produce enough headroom that I don't see those problems that everybody else does. But a lot of people are buying mainstream machines, Dells, Acers, HPs, whatever, and you're getting whatever that's in there. I'm building desktop machines, which, because I'm a gamer, are way overkill. Even for the stuff that I do, audio editing, video editing, is still most of the time way overkill for what I need. But my computing experience is very, very nice where I don't have these problems, where I'm not hitting that headroom and it's not peaking at any given time. So that's what I do. Solve the problem by throwing more hardware at it. John?
I feel Paco's pain. You know, I'm rocking a Core i7 with 16 gigs of RAM and all that, and Chrome still gives me issues, but it's normally when I got like when I have, excuse me, like 12 tabs open or 15 tabs open across three monitors, and I'm remoting in and trying to do a Google Hangout and all that kind of fun stuff. You know, the promise is they're supposed to be fixing that, the memory issues, like they've been promising for a long time. I mean, the rumor is that Firefox has fixed theirs. So I'm, like I said, I'm in the Google camp. I can't leave. I don't want to leave, period. So I'm just staying here.
So Paco, what do you do?
I just give up and go back to what I know. So I figured out what it is that's causing my issue. Like right now, the utilization is a certain AV decided to start a scan now because I was trying them out in my whole new switching of, or not switching, of testing out other products. And now I understand why me and you have both said we will never use this AV ever in our life. So,
gotcha. Well, here's the other thing too, is like when I'm testing out products, and again, I'm probably in this weird camp because I'm able to do this, but I have a bench machine or I have my kids' machines. So whenever I'm testing out products, I throw it on their stuff because I, you know, if they're down, it's not a big deal to me, but I never put it on my production machine. My production machine is like clean with just the stuff I need in here, and that's it. And that's why most days I smile, because my stuff just works. Now, when it doesn't, I cry like a little baby, and it's not a very fun to be around me at that time. Oh. All right, so what else we got? Random thoughts, man. Random thoughts. So, and the other thing too, Paco, I think when it comes to, there's a lot of things that are being done in Google Chrome and in the universe we use with Google Drive or whatever we're using, all the extensions that we use, that could I cut down the overhead of the memory problem? Probably, but I like the conveniences of what the browser brings me. So as I'm adding more stuff to it, I'm just, again, I'm going to solve it by putting more hardware on it so that I don't have these issues.
All right. Well, we're talking about switching products. Let's open one more can of worms before we're done.
Oh, no, not another can of worms. All right.
So let's talk about what are we each using now, and if we're considering a switch, what are we considering a switch to?
Oh, come on now. Why would you do that?
Everybody picks on me for all the switching I did this year. I got to throw back out. I mean, we don't have
I will say that when I was talking about this, they were like, really, you're pulling a John? And this wasn't just one individual.
Oh, whoa, so. Whoa. Wait, one man does one thing. I had Jeff. Thank you. I saw that.
Listen, whenever I think about doing something and switching something in my business, I just say I'm doing a John Dubinsky.
It was painful and expensive, but worth every dollar, in my opinion.
Hey, at least no one coined the term. No one coined the term whenever there's a mess up that says they pulled the Paco.
Well, okay, that's true.
I mean, I've probably tried about four different RMM platforms this year. I actually rocked a Windows phone for about 2 months. It switched all my stuff over to Office 365. It was a very big, I don't know what you call it, an experimentation year. I really wanted to delve in and look at some other stuff because I've been a Google Apps customer / reseller since the beginning. I'd been with an RMM platform, LogMeIn Central, for years, so on and so forth. So I went through quite a few switches, spent quite a lot of money, backup providers, so they could buy three or four different backup providers, you know, and now I've landed where I want to be. And I'm going to save where I am for a show with Paco.
There is one thing that, and people can send in their opinions on what they think, but there's one thing that I'm looking into. So a lot of people know that I was using Carbonite. I actually still am. And Carbonite had a nice, what I'll call service for the residential customer. And what it would do is my residential customers, I never sold the bottom of the barrel Carbonite service. I sold the middle tier, which included a local image backup along with the cloud backup of the files. And I would have them buy a Western Digital external drive. They plug it in. It would make a local image. Well, Carbonite is doing away with that service. I don't know why, because it just worked. But I'm looking at it now from a standpoint where I know a lot of people that sell backup will just do a cloud backup. And to me, that's better than nothing, but it's not the 3 points that you need. You need local, You need, you know, obviously what's on the machine and a cloud backup. Three different mediums. And it's nice to have that image. If you have a failed drive, you can basically throw another drive in. You can re-image it using that image, and you're back up and running and, you know, not skipping a beat. So I am looking at maybe other backup services that will provide that for a good price for the residential. Obviously, there's high-end ones out there that charge a premium, which I like their products. It's just a residential customer is not going to buy that product. It's just going to be way outside the realm of what they're going to be willing to spend. So for me, I'm looking for that residential hook where I can go, here's a product or service. I'm not making a whole lot of money on it, but here's something you can put in your system that's just going to run. And I wanted to get away from having to do separate things. I could have used Acronis and done the same thing and then used a Carbonite or a Backblaze or whatever for doing a cloud backup. But I liked having everything in one package that I could monitor and watch and know if it was working well or not. So that is, and I've got probably a little less than a year to solve that problem. So I'm going to be looking at different solutions. That is one of the things I have to look at over this next year.
I really like the CloudBerry solution, and it does everything you're asking.
Very good. That is one of the ones I'm going to look at. And it sounds like the price point might be right where we need it as far as for what a residential customer would be willing to pay. And so I like that.
Now, when you were doing your Carbonite, did you care about the commission that you were getting from reselling Carbonite, or were they just buying it on their own and you saw nothing?
Oh, no. I was buying it, and they were getting the licenses directly from me, and renewals came in directly from me. So they paid for it, and I renewed it. Not a problem.
So is that going to be a contending spot for you when looking for a backup provider?
You know, it's funny you brought that up because I just thought about something else that just makes me mad.
Burns your biscuits?
Yes, burns my biscuits. So let's talk about, since you brought this up, let's talk about channel-friendly products. This is a huge can of worms, and I know this irritates me to no end. I do not understand companies that are out there that sell. I don't mind that you sell a product on the consumer side, on the internet, whatever. I don't mind that. But you're telling me that as a company, when you become a reseller and you want us to be your advocates to go out there and tell people about your product or service, that if they don't renew through us, or a lot of times you're sending them notifications and pop-ups, which I'm sorry, antivirus vendors, this is the dumbest thing you could absolutely do. To have a pop-up, which we tell people not to click on all the time. Yet you're going to have a pop-up that pops up in the corner? Come on. Just because everybody else is doing it doesn't mean it's a good idea. Stupid is as stupid does. And so this is one of those things where if we're looking for vendors out there that are going to be 100% channel friendly, you can sell a product online to end consumers. That's fine. But when they're buying a product through us, you should have an easy way where we can go in there and renew that product for our customer and get the small, tiny commission a lot of times that we're getting off of your product or service. All right, before I blow a vessel, So what do you guys think about that as far as channel-friendly products? Because I'm seeing this more and more where these companies, for lack of better terms, are so afraid of losing business if they're already installed and there's a licensed product on a machine. They're so afraid that if a retailer like myself is not going to resell that product, they're going to come in and swoop underneath us. And that makes absolutely, that is not a partnership whatsoever.
Trust no one. No, I mean, I think, at least how I've been handling it is I have been limiting on what the customer sees on their desktop. So what I've been doing is the cool thing with my RMM and the new RMM that I'm trying out is they have a way to change either the taskbar icon or the tray icon to your logo, or my current RMM, you can remove all type of instances of anything. So no AV logo, no listing in the ad remove programs, not in the in the start menu. To them, they're logging in, they're doing their thing. We're doing everything in the background. And the reason why that's easier for me is because in case a scenario like what you just talked about comes up, I can easily pull them out, replace them with someone else that is playing the game fairly, and move on my day moving forward. And the customer doesn't see that as a constant switch on my end, because that conversation has come up in early in my, doing all this is, well, why have you switched AV vendors 3 times? You know, are you just going with the latest and greatest, or is that company giving you a bigger cut? You know, this is what our customers are thinking to us. So this allows to give a better experience for them. And the other piece of the whole thing is the matter of, yes, it does boil my blood that, you know, they can get some of these renewals. This is a lot of times where they can kind of just, hey, we're all about this. And then all of a sudden they go straight to consumer. I think it was a product that Asian did really great. They were killing it. And then all of a sudden they said, thank you for your assistance. I think we're good from here. They got all the data that they needed and went straight to consumer on Amazon. But essentially, you know, it was one of those where like an association was really helping this product and they felt like they pulled out their product. And then now there are certain vendors that have, you know, pulled the wool over us once. They're trying to play nice to us again. And the wonder is, are they going to do it again? And there's a few of them like that. So it's a matter of doing your due diligence and making sure that you protect yourself. So I put hopefully a good enough system where if someone's not playing right, I can easily pull them away without it causing any type of huge interruption between my customer's experience and interruption in my own workload during the day.
And I would suggest once you find a good partner that is balancing that out and dealing with you how you want, make sure you treat your vendor partners just like you want to be treated. Make sure you give them positive feedback. And a lot of times I look in the forums of some of the products I use and I see that we as techs are treating our vendors just like we complain that our customers treat us. So remember, you're trying to build a partnership, and the guys on the other end, if they are a good partner, are just trying to help you as well. So it's a two-way street.
It's not necessarily based on price. Everybody that is trying to squeeze every little margin out of products or services you're selling, here's a novel idea. And here's something that is purely adjustable and easy to justify. You can actually charge for, things like maybe, your time for installing, putting it together, right? So when you have a good product or service out there, treat them well. And if you're not making a huge margin on them, that's okay, because you can charge for the time and make more money that way instead of necessarily trying to get every little penny out of that product or service. Pay for a good product or service, and guess what? That product or service will be around for a long time. When we choose not to pay properly for these products and services, they end up going away or getting bought by some bigger fish in a pond, and then everybody complains. And you know who's to blame? It's us, the technicians and business owners. We're absolutely, most of the time, the ones to blame for these situations. Because again, a lot of us are cheap, and I don't get why, but we just are.
We want our vendors to make as much money as they can as well. I mean, not at our expense, but if they're providing value, because we want them to be there, improve the product, support us, period.
And I think that's the biggest piece too. Like when we build those partnerships, they should know, and depending on how big the partnership is, right? So like, you know, the guys over at Ninja, they're pretty big compared to the guys over at, let's say, Repair Tech. You know, if Repair Tech, because of the relationships we have with them, if they're hitting a rough patch or they got to up something or whatever, you know, they should on their end also reach out to us saying, hey, look, guys, we're planning on doing this. You know, how much of is it going to be a big of a pain? I think that's like John said, if we can make them comfortable enough to come to the community and say, hey, look, this is where we're at. you know, we need help, or hey, this is where we're at. We goofed up. You know, I think there's going to be a bigger, that helps grow the relationship even further because you got that transparency.
Exactly. And think about it like this, because I've heard this a lot, and especially when you're paying cheaply for a product and then you want this stellar support out there and you feel that everybody should just drop everything and answer your phone calls and take care of you, when you can't stand when your customers do that to you. You'll be irritated up and down because that happens to you, but yet you'll pass that along and do it to somebody else. When you're getting a good deal for something, sometimes you got to go, the reason you're getting that good deal is because, I don't know, maybe you need to be a good technician and actually figure some things out on your own versus just picking up the phone all the time and calling and going, hey, can you help me with this simple little problem? And doing that over and over and over again. If some things aren't working in some of the products and services that we use, just understand it's a growing phase. And companies go through that all the time. Is it going to work 100% of the time? No. Rule of thumb, 70%. If you're getting 70%, you're doing really good. Now, a lot of people will maybe disagree with me on that. I don't care. This is the way the world goes around. It's just the way it is. I don't ever expect 100% out of anybody except me. All right, let's go ahead and take another quick break, and we're almost out of here. We could probably go on for hours with this group here. If you guys want to support this show, go to patreon.com/computer repair podcast. If we've helped you out in any way, you appreciate what we do, the not only entertainment factor, but maybe you learn a thing or two, shoot a little bit of money this way, all right? Our newest patron, I want to recognize Mike Deem. And thank you, Mike, for being a new patron to the Computer Repair Podcast. We definitely appreciate it. And I want to thank all of our Patreon supporters for your continued support. You guys are making things possible, keeping this podcast going and being able to do the things that I would like to do. So I definitely appreciate that. Also, for those, and I'm learning, again, this is a learning curve, I'm learning how to exactly do this. The secret Facebook group for being a Patreon supporter should be here by the beginning of November. So I'm just trying to figure out how to get the whole rewards thing going in the Patreon and getting that information out there. And then we need John Dubinsky to sign up for Facebook and get his account back on there.
The sacrifices he has to do for the network.
I got to join the dark side.
Well, and let me put, so there's a lot of great Facebook groups out there. And the only reason I want to give back to those who are giving to us. So I want to have a smaller, intimate group of people that want to interact with each other and get some information, maybe directly from myself, John, Paco. And I say that because they are contributors also. And so, if I want a safe environment where people can come together and you can be allowed to ask a stupid question, and even though we may roll our eyes, you won't know it.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest piece too. Like, that's the point of this group. So if you're one of those, and I'm going to swear, so just mute this out in this part of it. But if you're going to be a hard ass to someone who's starting out, this is not the group for you.
Yeah.
Because we're all learning. We're all going in. There's a lot of us that, or there's a lot of techs that think that they know it all. And when someone asks a really dumb question and they just say, well, why didn't you Google it? Or what? No, that's not what this group is about. Go to another one of the Facebook groups that you probably started, or you're probably a good contributor to. Stay over there at that point. That's not where we want it from here. That's not what the network is all about. The network has always been about helping everyone. And that means, as dumb as the question is and as dumb as the answer is, that's what's going to happen.
And there's a lot of times where we get a lot of the same questions over and over again, but there are different people that are starting off at different times. So when they're coming into this podcast and listening to us and listening to what we're talking about, maybe they didn't listen to the 200 and some odd episodes before this or the other shows that are out there. So I will always pass along a link or a piece of information to somebody to point them in the right direction. Now, I might not be able to write, you know, a book on how to specifically do something, but I am all about helping somebody, point them in the right direction, maybe help that learning curve with what people go through when they're first starting out. Because sometimes I think the biggest problem with our business is that we're almost a lot of times an island unto ourselves. We don't really have a whole lot of other people to talk to. And that's the reason for podcasts like this. And that's the reason we keep coming back and doing this. This is a passion of mine. Because quite honestly, there's a lot of, I'm a busy dude and there's a lot of other things I could do, but I enjoy giving back to the community because I enjoy what the community has given me in years past. And I'm at a place and a time where I'm able to do that. That's why I give back. So.
And in that exact moment, his heart grew 3 times bigger than what it was.
Listen, do not mistake my snarkiness for not having a heart. I actually do have a heart.
Any number times zero is still, never mind.
I can't help it. My snarkiness just, I was born with it, I think. I'm going to end it fairly quick. We got one more thing to say. If you would like to be on this show, I would like to send out an invitation to those that have been on Podnuts Daily in the past, or maybe are newer to the community. But here's the way to do it. If you want to sign up to be a guest on the Computer Repair Podcast, you can do that by sending an email to guest@podnuts.com. And when you send your email, if you want to include a topic that you would like to talk about, that would be great. And again, that's what we do, is get a bunch of people together, talk about a specific topic most of the time that we can all learn from and maybe give our 2 cents to. So with that being said, Paco, appreciate you coming back out and doing what you do, man. And if you would like to give a parting thought and let people know where they can find you now, go ahead and do that.
Parting thought is to check out the last episode of Podnuts Daily on 492. I forgot what we ended up calling that show. We've come up with different titles of it. But yeah, that's my parting thought, to check out that show. And for those who would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on my new home on Podnuts Daily every week, which comes out on Tuesday.
All right. Very cool. Glad to have you back, man. And Mr. John Dubinsky, if you'd like to give us a parting thought and let people know where they can find you.
Find me next Sunday right here, same time, same place.
Boom. Any parting thoughts?
Peace, love, and happiness.
Awesome, man. Appreciate you guys coming out and sharing with us today. It's been awesome, and it's been a blast. It's been kind of relaxing, just randomly talking about things. Except the channel friendly thing. But anyways, if you want to come join us for the live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnuts.com/ Computer Repair Podcast Live. You can join in on a conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. The chat room is blazing away with information and adding to the show. We have audio available over at podnuts.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can also send an email to the show. And it's podnuts@podnuts.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. You can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast.